Commissioner Budget Division will now come to order. Today is Tuesday, February 10th. Year is 2009. And we're a little bit 25. Variety of titles, I don't know what I'm starting on. But in any event, you were a senator, so we have to go by that.
The lowest title?
Good chairman, members of the committee, I'll take any title you want. My name is Jack Davies, and I'm one of the Minnesota Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. Minnesota has approximately eight Uniform Laws Commissioners, all of whom donate their services to the conference. And the appropriation we request is covers only the dues of the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, which is supported by state legislatures around the country. And legislators are our only constituency. That's who we work for. It covers the dues, which are allocated by population, and the appropriation also covers the expenses of the Minnesota commissioners in attendance at the annual meeting, which is an eight-day meeting each summer. The dues support the national office, which is only has, I think now it's about a dozen people. Our national offices are in Chicago. And the expenses of attendance of the commissioners at committee meetings. The acts we bring to the legislature of Minnesota and elsewhere are drafted over a series of weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday committee meetings, and then approved at the annual meeting. We don't have much flexibility, and we got chiseled a little bit by the governor, but we can live with that. So his recommendation would be satisfactory. And at this point, I'd like to answer any questions people have.
Just to be clear, I don't know what the recommendation of the governor is, or the is it part of a budget proposal? Which tab are we looking at? Oh, there it is. I see. Okay, let's cover up. Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So you're essentially staying where the governor.
What we might do is have to short the conference in its dues. We're embarrassed to do that, but in light of the circumstances. Make them pay a little bit of the price, I guess, unless you feel very generous when you get to it.
$3,000.
We appreciate what you're doing here, and
well, thank you very much, and we think we do good work. Minnesota is among the very leaders among the states in adopting uniform acts. We hope you move us to the head of the line by passing a lot of acts this year. Bob Tennyson, one of the other commissioners, is here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any bills on the horizon that we should be looking for that you could comment on one way or the other?
I think Bob is about to take my spot because he has a list. Yes, we've got a a big agenda this year. The biggest one we have is about 3/8 of an inch thick, and it's 5 separate acts, all relating to probate law, and we put them all together, and we have a deal with the Bar Association that we will only pass those parts that they endorse this year. So, and they're studying away.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Tennyson. I'm one of the Minnesota Uniform Law Commissioners. We have about 10 bills that are being introduced this year. One is the child abduction. It's a bill to prevent child abduction or procedure. We have, I can't remember them all, I couldn't find my list, but we have, Nina, do you remember?
Debt services.
Oh, yeah, we've got one that's coming in at debt services. We have, I'm just drawing a blank here, but there's a bunch of them introduced already, a number of going in the next couple of days. I can't remember them all. All right. But there's a half a dozen of them anyway that'll be in. We'll keep the Judiciary Committee busy. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Merton. Are you prepared to go ahead with the...
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, this bill's underwent, this is a primary universal seatbelt law that we've been trying to pass here in Minnesota for at least 12 years that I know of. Senator Foley, you carried the bill before I did, and I forget who had it before you, but I think there's been... Senator Dill, and I think there's been several authors, and it's been a long time, and we still haven't gotten it done. This year, it looked pretty promising. I mean, we had a lot of good work that's been done in the last few years. The bill has always been favorably looked upon on the Senate side. Last year, we came real close to getting it passed in the House and it becoming a law. But there was always a couple sticky wickets, and one of them was this issue of the surcharge. And especially for a lot of people in the other body felt that, the $75 surcharge was too much. So we came to a compromise and said we're going to lower that to $25. And that was a couple years ago. And at that time, it was in this committee. At that time, there was a fiscal note written much like the one that is in front of you for this bill today that shows that there's going to be a loss to the court system of $1.6 million. After we dissected that in this committee, it was found that the estimates and the assumptions that were used were slightly inaccurate, and this committee decided to waive the fiscal note and to pass the bill as it was with the $25 surcharge instead of $75. Now this year there's another fiscal note, and it should be in your packet, and it does show $1.6 million to the general fund. But in their assumptions, they make a couple of incorrect assumptions. And we have some data from other states and other states that are in the upper Midwest, one Michigan and one Illinois. In their assumptions, they say that the the number of tickets that will be written will go down over time. And in Illinois, they found, this is historical data from Illinois, as you see, here's where they passed their primary seatbelt law, and the very next year they wrote 36% more tickets. And if we have the same experience here in Minnesota, and there's nothing to say that we wouldn't, that would definitely make up, that would easily clear up that fiscal note if there actually was one. So that's the example from Illinois, and it does show, you know, that very first year there was a 36% increase, and then after that it was 1%, 8%, and 3% increases. So it kept going up. Now, in the case of Michigan, they had an 8.8% increase in the first year of their primary seatbelt law. And the interesting thing to notice to note here is that most people just paid their fine, which actually saves the system more money. There is also a 30% decrease in the amount of citations that were dismissed. In other words, people were going, okay, I wasn't wearing it, and they pay their fine. So it was, it's been a, I'm not going to say a windfall in those two states, but it was more than enough to make up for the fiscal note that we have here in front of us. So the assumption that the number of tickets being written is going to go down is inaccurate. The number of tickets that actually will get written will go up. The other thing that is interesting to note about this is they don't take a couple other things into consideration. One is the cost of medical costs. Now, we all know, and this is well documented, you know, AAA can verify this as well as a lot of insurance companies, but every time, and DPS, every time someone dies in a car crash on Minnesota roads, it costs about $1.1 million. And that's a cost to society. It's increase in law enforcement costs to go out and do the accident investigation. It's, you know, it's those EMT, EMS services that go out and have to clean up the carnage. It's increased cost to the healthcare system. It's increased cost all the way around and to the insurance companies themselves, who in turn around and pass it on to us as people who buy insurance for our automobiles. So if you figure in the 30 lives, the approximate 30 lives that are going to be saved by passing a primary seatbelt law, now you're at $33 million of savings, and that more than clears up the $1.6 million. The other thing that was not part of the assumptions, currently, people who are in the vehicle who are 11 years and older don't get a ticket. People that sit in the back seat currently don't get a ticket. Under this universal plan, everybody gets a ticket. So if you got three people in the car, it used to be just the two people in the front seat got a ticket and the person in the back got to walk. Well, now everybody gets a ticket. So if you figure some of these things into the assumptions, plus the fact that now, you know, we're mandating this for everyone, including that 11 to adult age, and knowing that, you know, quite often there's more than two people in a car, that the fiscal note that was written used poor assumptions. This is basically the same argument that we used last year and the year before to negate the fiscal note.
Mr.
Senator
Cole. Initially, I thought I had some concerns, but I think Senator Murphy's explanation has been helpful. Let me also just follow up on a couple of things. Is the additional increase to the general fund is there a maintenance of effort requirement from the federal government mandated for use of their money? Is that part of the cost? I haven't had a chance to read through the entire fiscal note. But
I don't believe, Senator Cohen. We can get some answers. Miss Marty, who is probably the expert on this, is shaking her head no.
Okay. So that's not a problem. So the issue is the assumption that seatbelt use will increase because there's the possibility of a fine, but it seems there are a couple things. Mm-hmm. If I'm stopped for speeding and I'm not wearing a seatbelt, that's a wash to the extent that I get the $75 surcharge because I was speeding. And right. And I never would have been tagged for the seatbelt thing absent this legislation.
That's, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, you're absolutely right.
Okay. So if I'm tagged for failure to wear a seatbelt, and that's my sole offense, mm-hmm. and I get a $25 surcharge, right now I get a zero surcharge because it's not an offense. And if I'm charged with something else at the same time, I'm getting the $75 surcharge. Mm-hmm. So,
good points.
The second thing is that if this is based upon increased usage, and that's why we have a decrease in revenue to the state, whether it's $25 or $250, that's what we want, I think. To be blunt, it's the same argument then. And I tend to be a very strong proponent of, on cigarette taxes, the cigarette tax can't be high enough to suit me. And the argument I get back on that is, well, then people won't use cigarettes, to which I say, great, it's working. So it seems to me that, at least from my perspective, I'd be inconsistent to raise that objection in this instance. When with the cigarette tax, I think if we impose higher cigarette taxes and that results in something like less youth usage of cigarettes, that's a positive thing for some of the same reasons you mentioned, mm-hmm. ultimately health care costs and so on. And so if the cost of increased seatbelt usage, even if you can make the argument that there's less revenue available, that's probably a positive thing then.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, you're correct. And even though you theoretically could have this drop-off going to the court system, you would have a great increase in the societal costs. I should say a decrease in the cost to society because someone chose not to buckle up.
Mr. Chairman, just a final comment. I'm probably about a 75-80% seatbelt user. So if this thing... I was going to say. Exactly. Exactly.
Chief?
He's going to say you're going to be looking at the crowd here before you.
Yeah. Probably the wrong group of people. Person to my right and the fellow there and down at the end of the table and people.
Mr.
In the
Chairman,
audience.
I think what he meant to say is he wears it all the time.
So, but if I'm driving around St. Paul, and that tends to be my lack of usage, where I'm going to just drive to the drugstore. And now I'm going to be followed by a St. Paul police officer who's going to stop me. That's going to take my usage up to 100%. So that would be a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, you're correct. A lot of employers, and I can't say that, personally, that I was always a proponent of the seatbelt law. The first couple of years I was here, I kind of fought it. But then... not only did I get a little heart-to-heart talk with Senator Langseth, and if you ever had one of those, don't. But it became a condition of my employment with XL Energy. If you were caught driving the company vehicle without the seatbelt on, they would fire you. And the union would back up the company in that instance. Automobile crashes are the leading cause of workplace safety death. And you're seeing more and more companies that mandate the use of seatbelts, even though we do have a law on the books. Unfortunately, a lot of people in the trades, we all kind of feel we're bulletproof and we're not going to wear that doggone thing. And but when it's a condition of your employment, getting that paycheck and making your house payment and all, you buckle up. And I just really feel strongly, especially for the youth in this state who know what the law is, know they can't get pulled over for not wearing it. I think this is one of the best tools that we have going for law enforcement. I mean, it's just the threat of seeing a cop in your rearview mirror and not having that seatbelt on is going to change a lot of the personal behaviors, especially of these younger drivers. And You know, these teenage drivers are about 6% of the drivers out there, but they represent about 12% of the fatals on our roads. And the majority of the time it's because they're not wearing seatbelts. And Senator Foley, you know full well from being on the force for, what, 20-some years? 50? 33? Okay. For the officers involved that have to pull up to these crash sites, it's not a pretty picture. And a lot of times when these folks get ejected from the vehicle, that didn't have to happen. And a lot of times if you keep people inside the automobile, there is room to live there. And, all too often it's our younger drivers that are deciding not to buckle up. And it's a tragic waste of human life.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had a couple of questions. I talked to Senator Murphy beforehand about the fiscal note, and I think I have a clearer sense. And I know, Senator Murphy, we've heard this bill on the floor a couple of times in committee, whatever. So I'd move that Senate File 42.
I have something.
Okay.
Hello.
Senator Bessel,
I've got a question. No, I do have something in here, and I may have a moment here. Senator Murphy actually has been around for quite a while, because you and I came in the Senate in 1993, and the senator that I replaced spent a lot of time working on this. His name was Don Frank, and actually he was, I think, more obsessed with this issue than anything else. And we called him the seatbelt senator. He'd be willing to trade any vote, do anything, and he worked very hard on it, but I think to the exclusion of other issues, maybe, and that's... I don't know. Anyway, I've got a question. You've got a strange effective date. June 29th, 2009. Now, as I read the fiscal note, that if we enact this on or before June 30th, Minnesota may receive a $3.4 million. But June 9th is a Tuesday, and usually we try to do it like the first day of the month or August 1st or the start of the fiscal year. What's so significant about June 9th?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzold, June 9th was the birthday of a constituent's daughter who was not wearing her seatbelt and was killed.
Mr. Chairman, I have some concerns. I mean, I recognize that you've got a constituent and her daughter was killed, mm-hmm. and you want to name the bill after her.
Mr. Chairman, no. Catherine Swanson was the leading seatbelt advocate in this state for years, over 20 years. And she passed away of natural causes last year.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, there have been many mm-hmm. people who have worked on this issue. And, my committee administrator, mother died in a car accident not wearing a seatbelt. I think it's sometimes problematic when we try to name bills after people and, have mm-hmm. effective dates. Given the tragedies we've had, mm-hmm. trying to single out any one person and so forth, it's different from, say, Senator Michelle's bill on Abigail Taylor. That was a unique situation, mm-hmm. one person, and it highlighted a special problem. Mm-hmm. This isn't unique to any one individual, and I think it actually diminishes the bill, I think, when you try to say, well, we're going to have some special effective date and so forth and a special name on it, when if you're correct, it's throughout the state. So I think it actually doesn't help the bill to have the citation here of name and an effective date just for one person, and I would... Mm-hmm. suggest that maybe we ought to reconsider that part. I've actually voted against this, and I might be prone to vote this a little more, Senator Murphy, if we could make these just minor adjustments in the bill to help my comfort level. Hint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, maybe you can run it by the committee how it's going to work. If you're going to have everybody, three adults in the back seat now not being seatbelted, and you have a driver not seatbelted. Say he is seat-belted and he's pulled over for speeding and he finds out the three in the back are not. Is he going to get three tickets for that? How's that going to work?
Well, it depends on their age. If they're 15 years or younger, the driver's going to get all of the penalties. If they're over the age of 15, 16 on up, they're going to get their own penalty. But it's going to be You know, and for those for the 15 and under, it's one surcharge. Now, everybody else in the car, if they're all adults, are going to get their own surcharge. And ticket.
Quite different than last year's bill.
No, I think that's the same as last year. Yeah. This is a universal bill, and that's what it was last year, too. Everybody has to be buckled up all the time. There might have been some differences with some of the money, but I think that this was the same thing that we did last year. 2 years ago, it was a little bit different than it is now, and I know that for a fact. But, you know, bottom line is there's a trooper that I know that said that he'd never unbuckled a dead man before. Well, Senator Foley, I've heard it from you, too. But then I talked to this same guy here, and it must have been around Thanksgiving. But he said, yeah, I finally unbuckled a dead man. And I said, what happened? And he goes, well, the person in the back seat wasn't buckled in, and he flew through the windshield, and on the way by, yep, clipped him in the back of the head with his boot and the driver, and so everybody was dead.
So. Further questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, according to the fiscal note, that if this bill became effective on or before February 15th, we would apparently qualify for some funding. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, Senator Murphy, you may have different information, but I don't think it's going to happen. I am concerned about the effective date. You know, again, I'm sympathetic to your constituent's daughter, but I think this is a broader issue than that. So June 30th, you know, would be a logical one, or June 1st. Obviously, if it goes past June 30th, we don't qualify for some funds. So unless there's a better date, I would move that we make it effective June 30, 2009.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, if you're going to make that motion, I'd prefer it to be on the 1st.
Okay, I'll move to change June 9th, 2009 to June 1st, 2009.
And that is
the effective date on page 6, line 17. The act is effective June 1, 2009, and it applies to acts committed on or after that date.
Further discussion?
Are we keeping the name?
That's next.
Hearing none. All those in favor, indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay.
No.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to delete Section 8 again. I don't happen to know who Ms. Swanson was. Maybe we could name a highway after. We just named one after Irv Anderson yesterday. So, but I think it diminishes the bill to try to specify that this is one person, and this is it's a bill of statewide interest. People have worked on it very long, and I think that you know, it's trying to single out that this is one person's work is not. I mean, we could name it after you, Senator Murphy, but. I think Section 8 really doesn't need to be in the bill, so I'll move to delete that.
Discussion on the motion.
Mr. Chairman? Mr. Chairman, Senator Betzel, you know, the effective date, I understand what you're saying there. On the issue of naming this law after Catherine Swanson, I think I'll have to be a little more hardline. I'd like to see that stay in. And I can't say enough good things about Catherine Swanson. And a lot of people in this room knew Catherine a lot better than I did. But what I knew was we would never be here at this point without her guidance and leadership. And it was not only on the seatbelt law, but a lot of safety-related items when it comes to highway and traffic safety. And she didn't ask for this, to have this honor, but, you know, she had a very insidious disease that slowly whittled her away. And one of the last things that she had said to me was that, you know, whatever happens, happens to me, but by God, you better pass that seatbelt law. And that's how strongly she felt about this, and I would just like to honor her memory.
Further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor, indicate by aye.
Aye.
Contrary, nay?
No.
Motion failed. Back to the original bill. Discussion on that?
Chairman, remove the bill. Have it referred to full committee on finance.
As amended?
Yes.
Discussion on that? Well, we discussed that. I really want to thank the author. I thought other members had put so much time and effort in this. For a lot of people would be alive today if it weren't for the fact that they weren't wearing their seatbelt 10 years ago, 15 years ago, or whatever. I can remember buying seatbelts myself. Put them on the squad car before we had them available for the average car. So I've been around a long time, and I'm sure that I want to applaud some of these. Senator Higgins is one that posed the seatbelt for a long time until we showed her the results of that. And my understanding is that she supports this today. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and also, something to keep under your hat. The State Patrol put a video together that is very powerful, and when you're out there talking with your high schools and stuff, you might want to mention that and tell them that the State Patrol is always available to come and show that video to the driver's training classes. It's very powerful. Thank you.
We now have a point of adjournment.
You got to get rid of that.
Leo, I guess.